Okay, this is Karen Brewster, and today is October 2nd, 2018, and I'm here in Skagway, Alaska, with Dennis and Nancy Corrington at their home on Broadway Street. And we're going to talk today a little bit about the history of Klondike Gold Rush National Park and Skagway and business here and wherever else we go.
Wherever it takes us.
And wherever it takes us.
All right, so, sounds good.
Yeah, so Dennis, maybe if you don't mind starting.
Sure.
Can you tell me, did you grow up here in Skagway?
No, I grew up in St. Louis. And I wound up in Alaska when I was going through
You ended up here as a school teacher in Nome.
In Nome.
Okay. Yeah.
After I got out of the Army, yeah.
You got out of college, yeah.
Well, after college, okay. Then so Army,
So you went to college in St. Louis, or?
Yes.
In Missouri.
To be a school teacher.
Correct.
And then what year did you come to Alaska then, to Nome?
66.
66, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And then you went into the Army after that?
No.
Before that. Okay. And then what brought you to Skagway?
I guess it was a job. Let me think.
You came to Skagway because you were teaching and then you had gotten into the trading post business, and
you got interested
in tourism, and you came down in 1974 for a conference, and what you told me is there were 9,000 visitors to Nome at that time and 80,000 to Skagway.
And I lied to you.
You lied. Anyway,
Skagway seemed like a better business opportunity.
Yes.
And actually, when I graduated from college, I went to Nome as a teacher. And I did teaching up there. And it was a boarding school, almost, scenario, with bringing natives to that area, often Gamble and Savonga and Shishraf and every place. Right. And so that was very interesting because it just kind of was easy to work with these kids. They were articulate. They couldn't speak much. I couldn't speak much.
You couldn't speak Eskimo
I couldn't. So
they were more fluent in Inupiaq than in English at that point.
Yes.
The kids were.
Yes. Yeah, so I spent a lot of time learning the language, and it's going away now. If you don't use it, it goes away.
I have the same problem.
Yeah. But I started traveling in the off-season to their villages. I go to Savunga, I go to Gamble, and Little Diomede, Shishmaref, and just places, and talk to the families, and talk to the people in the stores, and it became apparent to me that there's an opportunity there as well. Just like the ivory that you're wearing. People don't understand it, don't see it, but there's a market for it. And if people are making things in their homes, they can't just turn around and give it to the local place because they don't want it. Anybody can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started having a trading post in Nome built out of a log cabin. And traveled pretty much all over that thing. I like St. Lawrence Island a lot. I like Little Diomede and just really places that nobody ever goes to.
Yeah. And And so you were buying up the ivory carvings from the artists and then selling them at your store in Nome?
Yes.
And were other people doing that at that point, or you were not sort of the first one?
Not really. There were a couple of bad guys that were hook up with a bunch of whiskey and go into the places and trade them out. And I stayed away from them. I knew who they were, but I just stayed away
from them. You paid the appropriate money to the artists.
If
money
we can,
or whatever they wanted. You know, we need a new fire. Right. We need a 35 volt.
We need gas. Or,
yeah, whatever the local store didn't have. And the people.
Are you recording for something that somebody's going to listen to?
Yeah.
Okay, well, as I said, there's an issue with memory here.
Right.
So if we can back up just a little bit.
Sure.
When he was teaching, he was a teacher for 1 year, and then he became principal of the Eskimo Regional Boarding School. And when he went out to the villages to recruit, he would get requests for various things. Can you bring me sewing needles? Can you bring me this, that, whatever it happened to be, even an outboard motor and fishing rods and things like that. And so he was still teaching at that time, but when the natives paid him off, they paid him in carvings.
Right.
And so all of a sudden he ended up with a lot of ivory carvings and nothing to do with the ivory carvings. So at that point, he had thoughts of perhaps opening a trading post. He loved the native culture. That was he really, really loved the people up there. And so when he finally decided to get out of teaching, he was at a point where he kind of had to either, they wanted him to be superintendent of schools, and he either had to agree to do that and to get into the politics of things, or strike out on his own. And so that's when he decided to open the trading post in Nome, and it was called the Arctic Trading Post. So
right, but they also wanted me to join the what do they call them?
The union?
The union, yeah. And I said, no, I can't do it, because the people in the union don't know jack shit about the schools and that kind of a thing. And so I decided just to have a trading post, which made it a lot different.
Well, yes, and I mean, then you really got involved actively with ivory and skins, furs, all that kind of stuff. You were a trapper. You did a lot of things like that that went along with the idea of trading post.
All out of Nome.
Yeah. Traveled around by a snow machine.
But then,
right. Dogs.
And you did, he raced snow machines and he ran the Iditarod. He was part of the Nome Kennel Club, which was the contingent that put together the Iditarod. Mm-hmm. So he was one of the founding members. Joe Reddington.
No, the other guy from Nome.
Earl Norris.
No, he's from Wassilla, the guy from Nome.
The one from Nome. Okay, let me think.
Howard.
Oh, Howard.
Howard.
Yeah, Howard.
Right.
But anyway, that was kind of his thing, and his bailiwick. He didn't really want to leave Nome. He was pretty happy there, but family issues, and then I guess being in the colder community, he decided that Skagway would be a good...
You came south for the weather.
More or less. Well, and the business, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
There were so many more tourists.
You said it was 74 when you came to Skagway?
First time was 74, 76 is when he opened
the
business.
So 74 was like a statewide tourism conference?
It was kind of like the ATIA. I don't know if they called it ATIA in those days. It's the Alaska Travelers. What does it stand for? I have to think.
Alaska Travel Industry
Adventures or something like that. I don't even know. ATIA.
It's what you're, as a tourist business, you become kind of a member of.
Right.
Yeah, but this town was in pretty bad shape because they didn't have a money coming through. The railroad wasn't going on. People were moving out. There were a lot of empty houses all over the place. But it still had some
Well, the railroad potential. Was active, but it wasn't. People had started to leave.
I think the railroad shut down in 82 and then started again in 88.
Right, but it started as a tourism.
I know, but it was still going in the 70s, but not maybe as full-blown as it had earlier.
Right.
Definitely, and there weren't as many tourists, so it didn't have the same appeal, and they weren't considering it a tourist railroad. At that time, it was a working railroad.
Moving coal up and down and things like that.
So I think maybe the ore had
stopped.
They weren't bringing as much in, but it wasn't like it was when the train closed. I mean, that was terrible for the town.
Yeah.
It was devastating. People were... I mean, it was a mass exodus, really.
But even in 76, when you opened your first business here, it was a community you wanted to invest in, even though it was on the downside?
Yes. Yeah. I mean...
You saw opportunity.
I saw the opportunities, and the things that they had down here were similar to what we had in Nome. Mm-hmm. And so... there's more ivory in Nome than there is down here. They're always looking for it, so here's a...
Right.
But they had furs and other things. But every other building was empty in Skagway.
Yeah.
It was...
That takes a lot of courage to start a new business in a town where every other building is closed.
I see it as another... possibility, because what they all are falling apart, and what's wrong with it? Find out what's wrong with it, and can you? There's a house, and the guy says, "It's for sale." And I said, "Well, how much you want?" Well, I paid X, Y, Z, but I don't need it. Nobody wants to rent it. Would you want to rent it? No, I wouldn't want to rent it. Would you want to buy it? Yeah, I'll buy it. How much? And then you're digging back and forth. What can you do?
So it was cheap real estate.
Pretty much.
Cheap. Yeah.
When Dennis first came, he went to Kermsey's across the street from where our present flagship store is. And there was a realtor in town whose name was Cy Coyne. And Cy was getting to the point where he was kind of losing his memory. And Dennis wanted, when he bought the property that he bought, he wanted the piece next to it, but it wasn't for sale. And I think Cy owned it himself.
Yeah.
And so he agreed to let Dennis have right of first refusal. And a year later, the Park Service went to him and asked for the same thing. So
went to
Cy, and Cy gave them right of first refusal. So when it came to our wanting to expand our building in 1984, we had already at that time, the Park Service said, well, let's just split the property. We'll take the corner and you can take the middle, which are the part adjacent to your building. So that's what we ended up doing at that time. But it was kind of interesting because the Park Service at that time said, well, we're never going to build on that building. You know, we are in that lot. We won't do anything with it. So we gardened it and we ended up, like the gardens that are there now, we actually put in ourselves with all of our kids carrying rocks from the river.
The Corrington store up on the corner.
On Fifth Avenue, yes. So, but Kermsey's, he really was interested in Kermsey's, but Cy Coyne did not have a key to the store. And at that time, he probably, I think you said you could have bought Kermsey's for maybe $120,000 that was full of antiques and everything, but he couldn't get in to see it. He wasn't going to buy something that he couldn't see.
Picking a poke.
So he missed out on an opportunity there, but, you know, one opportunity opens the door for another. So, but it's just...
I got to look at it.
But yeah, you usually do. But that's kind of how most of the acquisitions we've made in town, it would, an opportunity would come up or somebody would come to us and say, you know, we need to sell this property. We have to get out. And Dennis was always the idea man. So he never lacked for ideas of what to do next. And I'm kind of the implementer, so I went along with it.
You made it work.
But so that one there on Fifth, that was your first store?
Yes.
Right? No. And that's where the ivory is still being sold?
Yeah. Yes.
Then what?
Well, we bought the land and then built the building.
That building wasn't there?
It actually, the building that was there burned down. I just showed you a picture this morning.
Maybe okay.
Because then you own the Skagway outlet store, right? The one downstairs? The store that's downstairs from where we are now.
Yes.
And you own this building?
Own this building, right.
And the Golden North Hotel, is that?
Golden yours? North Hotel.
Yeah, well, the history, this is a picture of him when they built the log cabin.
Oh, okay.
That just came up. But I don't know if I've got those phases of the store.
So you built that building?
Which one?
The log cabin building?
The log cabin, yeah.
You built that yourself?
Myself and another guy.
Wow. Have you ever built anything out of logs before?
No, but the good news is I still have all my numbers.
You do have all your fingers.
All my fingers. Yeah.
And all your toes.
Well, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it's not that hard. I mean, you can look at it. If you ever played with a tinker toy, you can put it together. Yeah. And if you put it a big tinker toy, it was pretty much the same.
Yeah. Do you remember when you got here? Well, the Park Service hadn't really started yet when you got here.
Correct.
Do you remember when they came and what you thought about them coming and setting up this park here?
Well, when they came, they didn't say anything about setting up a park. As I recall, there was one person or two people that came, and they were going to talk about the buildings and things like that.
They said they were going to build two buildings only, and that would be all they were going to do. It wasn't going to be a regular big park.
Right.
And so they were only going to do the two buildings they have down at the other end of the street, but now they have 22 buildings.
Right. So it was going to be the old railroad depot.
Right. And the, what was the other one? What was that before?
Martin Itchens, that one?
No, it was the two buildings that are right close together. I'm not sure. One was the train station, I guess, and the other one was what?
I'm trying to remember.
Well, they have that.
Yeah, they have all that.
I'm more interested in how they went about interacting with people in Skagway when that the park was designated, and then what happened here, and how people here felt about this new designation happening.
From what Dennis told me, they were very skeptical and not real trusting of what was going to come about. And that's why they made all the assurances that they weren't going to take over any properties, and they were just going to limit to the two main buildings that they were refurbishing. So I think that kind of settled the town, and they've really done a nice job.
Did they stick to that agreement?
No.
No.
Not at all.
Absolutely.
every superintendent that came to town changed what they were going to do and how they were going to do it. And when I got here, it was a, I'm trying to think of Doug, what his name was, his last name. His wife worked at Westmark, but he was real easy to work with. And he was, in fact, he gave us permission to garden the property next to us, because Park Service hadn't done anything with it. It was just weeds there, and they didn't even really keep it mowed. So to make our building look more attractive,
it would attract to your business.
Right. So Dennis loved garden, and he did all kinds of wildflowers and everything, and got an old rhubarb plant from the Clark Farm out in the where Jewel Gardens is now.
Mm-hmm.
And planted it, and so it was our 100-year-old rhubarb plant. And then people started planting it around town. Dennis has done a lot of things. In fact, when he first came to town, he was told by one of the ladies that owned a shop downtown that she was so angry with him because he was washing his windows in his store, and that meant everybody was going to have to wash their windows.
It didn't look good.
And when we built our first building, we went to the Park Service and asked them what they thought about the plans, because we didn't have an Historic District Commission at that time. And they told him that our plan looked too much like Disneyland.
Wow.
Not to do it, but we did it anyway.
Oh, so at that point, there was no enforcement that you had to keep a certain look?
No, they wanted it to be much plainer than it actually is, but their buildings aren't plain. I mean, if you look at the two down there, they're not very plain. I think they're ornate and look really pretty. I would say that, well, first, Dennis had the log cabin that was in 1976, he built that, and then in 1978, he added on another section, and I was trying to find those pictures, but they're all kind of packed away, and he added another section to it. And then we didn't get married till 1984, and when we got married 2 years later, we added the part, the green with the tower, mm-hmm. and that was to house our museum. So we had that for a while, and then we thought about expanding, and we went to, I think the Park Service had started opening up things like the Lynch and Kennedy, mm-hmm. and so Dennis thought, well, maybe we had a really good manager at that time, and he said, maybe we'll expand. So he put in a bid for that building and was told that even though we bid more money, they weren't going to give it to us because they were afraid we would sell ivory. And trust me, it was really interesting. So, and I forgot what the difference in the bid was, mm-hmm. but, you know, we found out that
Lynch and Kennedy is an example that is a Park Service owned building.
Owned building.
They would lease out the space.
And they leased out the space. So anyway, we said, well, we don't have to sell ivory. We can sell other things. But they said, well, you're in the ivory business, so we don't trust that you won't sell ivory. So they opened it up to the present owner, who actually happened to work for the Park Service at one time. But anyway, she took it over as a children's clothing store. And within 2 years, she was selling ivory and all the artifacts and all the things that they told us that we couldn't sell.
Because that's what the tourists wanted.
That's where you can make some money.
Yeah, at that time, probably more. So anyway, because we didn't get that building, it ended up that this American Legion Hall, which is what this building was for sale. And we converted it into the Skagway Outlet Store. And then that was in 95. So in 99, we added this part, which is new. Serious. There was nothing. No, the whole thing.
Oh, I see. This
on
whole
this
section.
Just stopping at that wall.
Okay.
And so then, and while we were doing that, then I think we were kind of interested in a lot down on Broadway farther down on Broadway, because farther down, the better off the business is. And that we tried to purchase a lot next to the Golden Arth Hotel, but the gentleman that owned it at that time said that he wouldn't sell the lot without the hotel.
Oh.
So then we started negotiating for the hotel, but we really didn't know what we were going to do with it. And so we decided to put in a microbrewery. We wanted to kind of keep it as it was.
Was it an active hotel at that point?
It was. And so in 1997 is when we purchased that and refurbished and remodeled the whole thing. And so we had this building and the hotel, and we built the building next to it, the annex. And then in 2004, we built the Skagway Bazaar. And then in 2007, we built Skagway Old Town, which is the next complex down the street here. And it was just, you know, things would come up and you'd buy a piece of property and then you, but basically, if I can toot our own horn a little bit, we pretty much set the precedent for our building in Skagway. Mm-hmm. After we used the architect that we used, almost everybody used him for every job they had. In fact, he was telling me the other day that he credits us for his business, and he told us told me how much we had spent with him over the years, and I thought, holy cow, we could have built another building. But, I mean, you know, it's been a process, but he's a visionary, and he always has been. And, of course, there things change. You know, you get older. And
well, that's what you need probably to be a successful small business person, is to have the vision and be willing to take the risk.
And just follow
and
through.
And be willing to work the schedule we've worked for number of years that we've worked. I mean, we don't even know what a day off is.
Yeah, and so it's May till October 24/7? Or May till September 24/7?
Well, more than that. I mean, we work all winter long.
Oh, you still
work? Oh, you have to. I mean, if you see all the merchandise that has to be ordered, and it's hard to get employees, you have to start in the summer before to get employees to come up here. Housing is a really big problem in Skagway. And that's one of the things. I think it seems to me that there's so much, like, the Park Service, as good as it has been to this town and as much as it's done, it's also in competition with people like us who have real estate and kind of look to that as a retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few other entrepreneurs in town, but if you actually go up and down the streets, there aren't that many people other than the Park Service that own buildings. So they will always be in competition with the private sector.
Even if they lease the buildings for businesses?
Well, even if they lease the buildings, because they're contending with, I mean, we have the Skagway Bazaar is all leased out. And we're going to have a vacancy or two this year. And, you know, they have the option of going to a Park Service building instead. So they are competitors of sorts. So we're competing with the National Park Service or with the government.
I'm trying to figure out how they're competitors. Are they competitors in the same way if it were another business owner owning that building, or is it somehow different?
No, it's not different. Okay. It's the same. Where there is a big difference, I would say, I mean, you don't think of, if a private individual or an entrepreneur builds a building, like Mark Knorr built a building down the street with four, and ahead of most of our properties, with four actual buildings within the building for rental locations, you know, you think, okay, well, he's
good for him.
Right. Because he's a businessman, an entrepreneur. But when the Park Service comes in and builds four buildings that they rent out, and you are the private business person, you can't compete with the National Park Service. So that is a little bit of an issue. I know one of our congressmen had been in town, and he said he couldn't believe how many buildings the Park Service owned. And, you know, are we creating work when the private individual, are we taking away the opportunity for the private sector to come in and build by doing this? You know, maybe it's accidentally that's what's happened. But I know when we, I think I even mentioned to you that when we were gardening the lot next mm-hmm. to us, the Park Service came to us and said, you know, if you want to continue to do this, you're going to have to insure and indemnify us in order to keep gardening this lot. And we thought, wait a minute, we've put in like 20 years of gardening and work on this, and now you want us to indemnify the federal government? I don't think so. So,
And then are the property tax issues different if it's a Park Service owned building than a privately owned building?
I think if they lend it, and I might be wrong on this, but I think if they lease it out, taxes have to be paid. But they don't have to be paid by the Park Service. They have to be paid by the individual that's leasing the property, I think, is the way it goes. Now, I may be wrong on that.
Because I was wondering if they're like, having the Park Service own all the buildings, if there's a downside property tax-wise for the city of Skagway and services.
I think it has to be paid, but it comes through whoever's leasing the building pays the taxes. So I don't think... as long as they don't do anything with it or lease it out, I don't think there's any tax liability attached.
And now, I want to take us a step back because we skipped over, Nancy, your personal history and how you ended up here in Skagway and when.
Oh, you would never think I'd end up in Skagway, given my background. But long story short, Dennis and I, my parents and his parents, lived in St. Louis during the war, World War II, not one.
Across the street from each
and
other.
And so my parents didn't have children and they wanted to adopt. And the opportunity came up through a family member, Dennis's mother's sister, as a matter of fact. So my parents, after my parents moved back south of St. Louis, about 60 miles, small town, I was born and they adopted me, but our families remained friends. So fast forward, we used to vacation together when we were little kids and everything. And so fast forward, I guess it was 1980, I had married and I had three children, and my husband was an orthodontist on a big game hunt in the Yukon, and he was killed in a plane crash. So I was expecting my last baby. And Dennis's mother and I had remained good friends over the years. And so 2 years after my husband died, and actually 2 years after her husband died, Dennis came to St. Louis to visit his mom and he was going on a trip with his brother. And so she said, well, you haven't seen the boys for years. Why don't we go out to dinner? So we did, and Dennis and I were reacquainted. I was a widow and he was divorced, and we started dating, and we decided we really kind of liked each other, but what are we going to do with this situation, because I'm not moving to Alaska and especially after my husband had been killed here, you know, I didn't like the idea.
First thing she said is, you can't have an airplane and date me. I said, all right, it's for sale. It's for sale. Okay. Her husband got killed in a small airplane.
So anyway,
you had one at the time.
Yeah, it was an interesting match. And so finally, after several periods of off and on, he called and said, how about a compromise? And so... I compromised. We eloped in Skagway in 1984 and moved here at that time and came back and forth every year since then. So I was just saying today how difficult it is. I didn't want to take my kids away from their grandparents because my only brother had been killed and I was an only child, and my husband's family they had two kids, and so it was a big loss for them to lose their son, and I just thought, you know, I can't can't take them away. So I stayed. I said, well, we've got to at least do part of the time in St. Louis. And it's gotten more and more that it's like 7-8 months in Skagway and 4 months in Missouri, you know, are visiting our kids now that most of them are married.
When you moved up here, your kids were still in school.
They were all with us. Yeah,
so,
they came with
us. So they came here for every summer. And then school mm-hmm. back in St. Louis.
I would go to, Dennis's ex-wife had remarried and his two kids were living in Minnesota. So what happened at that time was I'd come up to open the stores in April. We'd get everything set. I'd go back. I'd pick up the kids in St. Louis, the kids in Minnesota, and come here. And then we'd be here all summer until they had to go back to school. Then I'd take them back to school. Then I'd fly back and close the stores. Wow. So that was... And I mean, we do a lot of traveling because of that.
Quite a compromise.
It was quite a compromise. Yeah. I mean, it would be so much easier to just live in one place.
But now, once your kids all grew up and moved mm-hmm. on, you still chose not to live here during the winter.
Correct, because our mothers were alive. Both of them had Alzheimer's. And we tried bringing them up here. It didn't work. Oh. They were so out of their element. Yeah. It just didn't work. And so then after they passed, we still had kids. We have one that's 28. So she's married now, but she was still little. And, you know, so we didn't want to take her out of her school.
Right. And then you had grandkids. It was,
and then grandkids. And that's the one reason we still, I mean, I love to be here this time of year because it's quiet and right. I can get a lot of work done. And, you know, everybody's in a pretty good mood. The weather's usually good, and it's a nice time to be here. But I don't know. It's been quite a journey.
And
that's a good love story, though. I like that story.
It is.
It's very sweet. He gave up his airplane for you.
He gave up. I mean, he loves Alaska. That was a tough thing. He said, "Do you know how hard I tried to get out of Missouri?" But then he tells his stories about his he always says he was a high school dropout, and he actually was. He was a month from graduating, and his art teacher told him he'd never graduate him because they had an argument over the value of art, and I guess Dennis wouldn't compromise. He said it's worth whatever a willing buyer is. Anyway,
it's interesting. So, but then you ended up selling art.
And he ended up selling art. That's why I mentioned it, because that is exactly. He was going to be a teacher. That was the way he was headed. But he ended up. I think you went into the Army right away, didn't you? After
high school.
He enlisted when he was 17, and his father had just died that year, so it was kind of a not great year. But then he went, back, and
that would have been Vietnam.
Vietnam. Before Vietnam.
Okay.
That was 1960, because your dad died in 59, and so anyway, he decided when he was in the Army that wasn't what he wanted to do for the rest of his life, so he came back and went to college.
Not good.
And then he got drafted for the Bay of Pigs, didn't you?
Yeah.
You were already in. You were in the reserves then, and he got recalled for Bay of Pigs, and then he went back again and finished college and then went on to get his master's degree in high school administration. Mm-hmm. So he always says he's a high school dropout. He doesn't tell the rest of it.
Well, you're talking about building the new buildings,
mm-hmm.
but they all look like they're period buildings. So that's the requirement?
No, that's Dennis. Dennis. He wanted everything to look like an old building. Like this is the...
Look at that wall.
Old, the BPOE. And I wish we had time to take you through the hotel because it's really neat. It's been totally restored.
Okay.
And he's just always had this real knack for bringing things back to life. And in the hotel, We have the museum in the hotel now, his Carrington Museum of Alaskan History, which is all the scrimshaw tusks telling the history of Alaska.
Oh, cool.
And that is actually, that was born out of his situation in Nome when I guess it was 1973, the Marine Mammal Act came about.
Yeah.
And he, at that time, was in possession of how many tusks? 40 tusks, ivory tusks, and he couldn't do anything with them.
Raw tusks.
Raw tusks. Yeah. And, I mean, he could have them because they were legal.
Legit.
But he didn't know what he could do with them because he couldn't, you know, what am I going to do with all these raw tusks? So they were all banded and tagged, and he decided he would do the history of Alaska and scrimshaw on the tusks, and they are gorgeous. And so he did the...
So did you do the art on them, or you hired somebody to do the...
I hired an artist.
But he drew... Like, he did all the research, and then he would draw a picture on the tusk, and then the artist would do, you know, the more definitive and nicer art. But that didn't always happen. He had one artist that had a stroke, or two of them, actually, that had strokes. And so he drew out his stick figures and everything, and that's how it came back to him. So in the museum, they're called bloopers. There are bloopers. It's been a cool idea. Quite a journey. And it's beautiful. I have a book. I'll grab that real quick if you want to take a peek.
So I know that now, aren't there historic building requirements in downtown Skagway that things have to look a certain way and meet certain standards? Were you involved in setting that up?
Not really, but from the way that I build those up, somebody else would like it and do it, and somebody else would like it. And there was a group here that belonged to the city, and I forgot what they called them. They were
the commission, the historic district commission.
Exactly. And we didn't really pay much attention to them because they had their heads up their butt, and the gal that was in charge of it hated me. I don't know why. I never did anything, but. On anything that ever came up, they'd always say, no, you
can't
do
this.
Oh, we've had, well, we don't have any trouble anymore, but these are the tusks, and that's the book.
Oh, neat. That's what I was wondering, is that you started your buildings before that commission came along and made people do things.
Not all of them, but...
But the beginnings, right. So you were kind of ahead of your time.
I've always been ahead of my time.
Sounds like it. cool. Now, so you never served on that commission?
No.
Did Nancy?
No.
No, okay.
Uh-oh.
Well, this book, it looks beautiful. Wow. That's really cool. I'll have to look at it more closely. So the Golden North Hotel is now the museum?
Correct.
Or is it also a hotel still?
Hmm?
Do you still have it as a hotel?
Oh, no. No. It's we're that close to opening it up and doing it, but it's three stories. The only way you can go up is with stairs.
Yeah.
So right off the tap, you know, somebody's going to sue you because they can't go up there and you can't do that and you have to put an elevator in. It's going to cost you, you know, a big money. And it's a pain in the ass if you have a something like that.
Right.
And people want it to be a different way and they want you to spend all of your money to do it. And it's easier to say, no, screw it. If you want to come see it, here's out there. It's out there. Take a picture of it. And some people want to come through and go through and take pictures. And we dittied out a lot on it. Because my My gut is, stay the hell away from it. What are they going to make it? They're going to pay $3 or $4 to walk through it. Somebody's going to fall down the stairs. It doesn't have an elevator.
Right.
And the first guy coming in with a you know, problem.
Right.
We're in the process of moving to the hotel.
Oh.
We're opening it up as a tour next year.
Well, that's what I was just asking, Dennis, if you had it as an actual hotel. But it sounds like you're going to make it a period museum of what it looked
exactly.
like in its heyday.
But see, this is what he started with, the log cabin, then he added that. And then when we got married, we added
the
green
one
part.
Yeah, because the one it is now has that tower on the corner. Right?
But, and I can't even, I don't even know where
it's
all these
here.
Pictures are. I think I must have taken them up to the hotel already. But our Skagway Bazaar, you know, he always took a theme.
Yeah.
And this, if you look at on 6th Avenue, the Skagway Bazaar has this look of everything. And then
so that other picture, is that you on this?
That's him on the dog bike. He used to do
that.
I can't believe I can't find those pictures.
So you were advertising your store?
He got in trouble for that.
Yes.
So you're on a bicycle being pulled by dogs, like a dog sled.
Yes.
Did you create this contraption?
I created that, yeah.
Wow.
I also ran the Iditarod.
Right.
And
but not on a bicycle.
Not on a bicycle. That would have been better.
So, Nancy said you got in trouble for doing this advertising?
Yeah. There were people that had... They were all bent out of shape because when somebody comes to town, they come in the boats.
Right.
So... What I do is I build that bicycle,
mm-hmm.
I go down to the dock, and the boat's tying up, and I'm going back and forth on the in a big furry button.
You had your big fur parka and fur hat.
And my parks and my dogs, and everybody on the boat are off the rails taking pictures like this. And when they finally got off, they wanted to go where that thing
they
was.
They saw Corrington's and went, oh, what's that?
And all the competition just blew their brains. They just tried to, nobody should be able to go on the dock. He can't have that dog on there. They just don't think out of the belt.
Right.
And so.
So you had to stop doing it?
I did it for a few years. No, because I don't care what the hell they think. You know, if you want to work as hard as me, go ahead.
Yeah.
But
I guess
I still have it. I mean, I could fire it up any day, but
this
I don't
is
want
just
to.
A log of the, log,
the cabin log
cabin when it was.
Yeah. The
remember that
oh,
one?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You see, that's what it takes to be a successful businessman, right? To get your name out in front.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it does.
That was fun.
He has a history that is amazing. I mean, he's almost some of the things that he's done in his lifetime. It's pretty crazy. And it's not just because he's my husband. He's kind of a bigger than life person. And
well, it sounds just, yeah. I mean, all the businesses you've had here. Yeah. And so I was asking about the historic district issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, that when you the first buildings there was no historic district requirements,
no,
anything like that.
That was for Corrington's, but that was the only one that didn't have
and so
some restrictions.
How did you deal with the restrictions with the new buildings and how you got along with that? I know that historic district has some push and pull.
It's so much better than it was. It's
yeah, they got rid
very
of
cooperative. They try really hard to work with you. And, you know, I feel like sometimes when I'm before the district for something, they're so nice and so helpful today,
mm-hmm.
compared to what they were when everything you knew when you went in, you have to take a pill for acid indigestion because you knew I didn't matter what it was. And so now when I go in, I kind of have, I know the routine, but I also know that I need to get rid of that reaction of everything's going to be a no, because you go in prepared for battle, because that's how it always was. And it's so pleasant now because they really try. I'm not sure what it was. It was used as a retaliatory thing at one time.
Do you have examples of things you wanted to do that they said no?
Tons. I have a file that big. We've had attorneys involved. I mean, ridiculous, ridiculous things. And I mean, even people now that were previously on the commission have said to us, oh my gosh, we hated when you were going to bring something in. We knew it was going to be a battle. Whatever it was, if Dennis Corrington did it, it was going to be a battle. And it was. As a matter of fact, one time I'm 71. So in 19, I guess it was 96, I guess. Dennis said, okay, let's get an old car. We're going to get an old car and bring it up here. Because at that time, we just had fairly newly paved streets in Skagway because we had dirt streets until, I guess it was 84.
Yeah.
And so anyway, he said, let's just get an old time car and I'll park it in front of the shop. Because what was happening was we had a lot of over the road traffic at that time. And so they would bring a big old camper and park in front of our store. Well, of course, at that time it was a little, it looked like that, and it would cover the whole store, you know. So he went to the, I guess it wasn't the Historic District Commission. I don't know who it was, Planning and Zoning or something.
Yeah,
and
P&Z.
But anyway, he wanted to have them put in no parking or, you know, no overnight parking or, you know, try to keep people from, and they would empty their gray water in the street right in front
and
of our building.
And sleep there all night.
And sleep there all night. And so he said, well, we'll get an old car. So we were looking for cars and we were in an old, I guess it was an antique car place, and they had a Rolls Royce Carniche convertible, and it was, it was 40 years. I was 40.
Yeah, but it
so
was
it was
ivory
quite
color.
Some time ago. Ivory convertible, and it was beautiful. It was, of course, a car that old. It was a 1976, and so it wasn't really that expensive. But it looked like a brand new, beautiful Rolls Royce. And so he said, well, we're going to drive it to Skagway. So we did. We had a really fun over-the-road trip in a Rolls Royce convertible. And I think we had dice in the front. Somebody
yep,
had given
a big pair of dice.
Yeah. And so we brought it up. And lo and behold, after, because that was our way of keeping the campers out, they passed a no parking zone as soon as we brought the car to town. And so we couldn't park it in front. We either had to park it in front of Kermsey's or on Fifth Avenue. So we messed with that for a while, and finally we kept it here in the winter. You know, we didn't drive it back and forth. And finally Dennis said, okay, let's just take it home and sell it, because it's not going to do any good to keep it here because we can't use it for the purpose we wanted to use it. So we drove it back to Missouri to sell it, and guess what? They passed another ordinance that you could park in front of Corrington's. So, you know,
they
just
did it on purpose?
There was one particular person that just did not like us. People don't like, often don't like success. Well, the same thing with don't wash your windows, because now with the rest of us have to wash our windows. And pretty much the architect that we used set the tone for the rest of the buildings in town. Almost everybody in town used him after we built our buildings. And Dennis would get an old picture out just like this one and say, okay, let's do this. This one was the old BPOE building. It's extended. It's not the same size, but if you look at it, everything fits, you know. It's the
and
same.
And that's the purpose of the historic district, was
to make it look
make
historical,
match the theme of the
sure
period.
Of the time.
But
right.
You can't afford to match the way the Park Service matches. Right. You know, if we could do that, that would be wonderful. But we can't. I mean, even we painted the Golden North Hotel and did some repairs on the roof and the dome last year, and it was $78,000. I mean, we, you know, a regular business person, can't do that. Whereas the Park Service hires 10 more people and they paint a building, you know, every 3 or 4 years, and it looks pristine.
So other historic requirements, did you have to paint your buildings a certain way?
Certain colors that fit within their historical palette, which I don't object to. They had a few things that when they had the person that was always unhappy when we brought something to the table, when she was still on, there was a building across the street from the hotel, adjacent, but across the street, and they painted it McDonald's red and yellow. And how that ever got passed is beyond me. Now they've put some signage up that's kind of tempered it a little bit, but it certainly stands out. Nobody misses the building, but it was really awful when it first went in. Nobody could believe that that got through. But just like if you change the paint colors, you have to take it through the district. If you just repaint, you don't. They, you know, they're pretty liberal about that. I mean, I can't even tell you how much better it is to work with
them
now.
But I was wondering what it was like in the old days and what things they were requiring that were so kind of
things
difficult.
That probably were worth a lawsuit if you wanted to go through the problem. One thing they said is you can't put anything on your windows. If it touches your window on the inside. So if you wanted to put a sign on your window, unless it was an inch away from your window, you couldn't do it. And finally, I think our city attorney said, you know, you got to quit pushing that one. That's not going to work.
Now, could you write on your windows?
Mm-mm.
So your signs for your stores, your advertisement, it's on a signboard hanging?
Well,
on
the outside. You could, like, put a logo or something like that. Of course, it had to be passed by the district.
So it had to be in a certain style.
When we had the hotel operating, we had a bar, a restaurant, a microbrewery. We tried to keep it in keeping with what it was historically. So we had a big problem with, it wasn't air conditioned. So people wanted their windows open and the premier rooms are in the front of the hotel. So we had a bar in the front of the hotel, and then outside we had a patio with a fence around it, and you know, we could serve alcohol there, but it had to be fenced in. And we tried to keep it pretty quiet, but we had people go to bed at 7 o'clock, you know, when they didn't, you know, you couldn't keep the noise down, and they'd complain at the front desk, and you know, we want a refund on our room, it's noisy, it's this. So we decided to have our architect draw up a false front for the hotel that mirrored the hotel exactly. The only difference would have been that if you looked at it from the side, you could tell it had been added on. But it had an original entrance, an Arctic entrance, mm-hmm. that was probably 12 feet long. This would have had to be, I think, 25 feet or something like that, maybe a little longer. And it looked exactly like the hotel, and nothing would have been disturbed on the inside. The same wall would have been there, but it would have just been an enclosed bistro type thing. And it passed, and we were like, oh good, because that was going to make our decision whether to keep the hotel or not, because of the, you know, having to refund money and all that kind of stuff. So this one particular person that was chair of the commission came back from a 10-day vacation, and she got back on the 10th day, which is the limit for anybody protesting something that has been passed. She did a model of the hotel and took it to planning and zoning, and they turned it down, and we took it back to planning and zoning, and anyway, it went through planning and zoning and went through the assembly, and it was totally kiboshed, and it was something that they had agreed to allow us to do. And so that's when Dennis said, okay, fine, we're taking the hotel, we're going to close the hotel, we're going to turn it into retail. It doesn't make enough money to warrant our investment, and we're done.
Yeah.
And so that's basically what happened then.
Yeah, running a hotel is a whole
other.
Absolutely.
And the bar and the microbrewery and all that. I mean,
parking the cars.
Yeah. But even down to the opening the microbrewery, Dennis was always an historian, so he liked Captain Cook's journals. He bought an original edition of mm-hmm. all of his journals. And so in the journals, he talked about making spruce tip beer.
Oh.
And he did it because his people were getting scurvy on and they needed something, so he made spruce tip beer. So Dennis brought spruce tip beer back, and now it's everywhere.
It's everywhere, yeah.
But he is the one that brought it back in 1997, and we used to take all of our people out and pick the little spruce tips at the beginning of the season. And but he was always thinking and moving and had ideas like that constantly. And you know, it's kind of a shame because you don't want to, I mean, people don't get honored usually within their lifetime, but he has done so much in this town. And you know, and of course there's always jealousy if you're successful. That's, people think you're just in it for, and if we were in it for just the money, we wouldn't go to all the extra expense with what we do with our buildings. And I mean, it's the pride, the personal pride and joy that you take in making things that.
That sort of entrepreneurial, that drive and all this ideas that you have, do you know where that comes from? Like, were your parents like that or your grandparents?
No.
I don't think so.
It's just who you are.
Yeah.
I think so. His brother was more academic. He had a full scholarship to Yale, and he did all kinds of things with computers before it was, you know, he said, I'm going to be a millionaire before I'm 30, and he was a millionaire way before he was 30 because he sold something to IBM. And
so
you both
were ahead of your time in different ways.
Pretty much. And Dennis was always an adventurer. I don't know if he told you about his trip to South America, but he walked from St. Louis, Missouri to Bogota, Colombia.
Oh my goodness, no, mm-hmm. you didn't mention that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We hadn't gotten
just for yet. Fun.
Just for fun.
Didn't get to that one yet.
Yeah.
No.
He did. And that was an interesting time in his life.
It was very interesting.
But ask another thing about the HDC. This is a good one. We had wrought iron flour pots. They held pots. They were containers for the pots, and then it had a bench across it, and it was behind, they were behind the fence when we had the brewery, and we did have two in front. And Stuart Rothman, who was a photographer and a friend of ours from Fairbanks, came down and he photographed the hotel and took pictures of all of it. And it was 1998 when he did that. Mm-hmm. And I got a call from the commissioner of the HDC at this time. It was a man. And he said, you don't have a permit for your flower pots in front of the hotel. Well, we had taken the fence down because one side was leased out to a jewelry store. And I said, no, they've been there since we put it. Oh, no, they haven't. And I said, I've got a picture taken by a professional photographer that shows the benches. Now, the benches, the wood cracked on the benches, so we just had the containers, and a couple of the other of the benches had to be thrown away, but we still use the containers, the wrought iron containers. And they were very Victorian looking, you know, with the flowers and everything and the wrought iron green. And so we ended up having to go to court with the magistrate for an entire day to prove that those pots had been there. I mean, can you imagine?
They were grandfathered in.
Well, they were grandfathered. They changed the law in 99, and that's when they cited us for it. And they wouldn't believe us. Even with the picture, the head of this commission would not believe it. And so we had the chief of police, we had the magistrate, Dennis, me, and I don't know who all else on this hearing. I mean, just wasted time, just silly time.
Who serves on that commission?
Now,
not by name, but the local people, the local Park Service people?
Normally, no, Park Service isn't allowed. They're a consultant, you know, and that's nice to have somebody. Mm-hmm. In fact, Susanna, I'm trying to think of her last name,
Dowd
sent me a thing about awnings, because we've done awnings, and you know, we went through all kinds of hell over awnings, but anyway, we do have our awnings and I need to replace them. And so I said, would it be all right if we use the same material if we can get them, and if not, can we use the material that's down the street at on Third Avenue? And so they got into this discussion of our striped awnings. Okay, well, the striped awnings had been approved in 1997, so of course they are. But she was good enough to copy this stuff and send it to me to remind me, you know, and I knew that they were acceptable because they were in the Clayson building, and that was one of the buildings we almost copied, but then we didn't get that piece of property. But anyhow, just they're just so much more helpful now. It used to be like, they just wait until you could do something wrong and jump on you, you know. And now it's like, well, that font isn't approved anymore, but we have one that's almost like it, so you can use that one. And that's it's a totally different, totally, totally different tenor.
And why do you think it's changed?
I think because the two people that were causing the problems before were on a power trip. And there was, for some reason, either jealousy or, I have no idea.
Well, they made it difficult for you, but they made it
for everybody. For everybody. We were really a target, but there were more than just us. That, I mean, people dreaded going before the HTC.
You still have to use this certain type of font and writing for your signs.
You do, which I actually think it's a good thing. You know, I don't think they can, I mean, if it's not an historic building, I think that they shouldn't have a whole lot of say over what you do. But I mean, a door got placed in one of the buildings on Fourth Avenue, and it was all glass, you know, panes, and that's not historic, and it looks so out of place. So I don't know how it got through, but I think keeping that mentality, nobody wants it to not look old and historic. Everybody really does. We're not Seattle, or, you know,
tourists come to
they
experience.
Do.
Right.
And that's what, I mean, I think most of everything, I mean, our buildings are all fairly historical in nature, but the hotel that has the museum, which is very underrated and I don't know if it's underrated, but it's just undervisited. That is, when we first opened that in 1986, I think it was, Princess Tours approached us and said, you know, there's nothing to do in this town. The train was still closed. It was before it reopened. And they said, you got to get that museum going. So we did. We got it finished. We opened it. We had a big party and invited all the tour guides in town. And then the lady who was running the Skagway Museum, the city museum, got all up in arms because we were opening a museum. And at that time, what did we charge, $2?
I think so.
And she complained about that, but she also told this person in charge of Princess Tours that if they brought people through our museum, that I don't even know what all, I forgot what he told, what this man told me, but they wouldn't take on the water or the waste or do whatever, you know, there were repercussions. And then he said, it's because it's attached to a retail store, you know, so that's why the city didn't want that to happen. Now, the Park Service is also in competition, in they're starting to sell things, you know, so that's a competitive thing too. But I mean, that doesn't hurt our business. It's not enough to make a big difference. The real estate is probably the biggest thing, and they don't lease everything out either.
Right.
You know, a lot of it's just for tours, but then, you know, you have the Mascot, which is a very nice little building, and it has bathrooms, but they don't really want to advertise that it has bathrooms, because we operate free bathrooms in our bazaar, and holy smoke, is it costly to do that.
Oh, yeah.
We do it to attract people to the back, and right now it's not run the way we'd like for it to be run, but it But by the time you buy all the toilet paper and pay $6,000 a summer for somebody to clean it, and, you know, it's hardly worth it. So I can understand why they don't want to keep it open. But we desperately need that, the infrastructure to keep up with the cruise travel.
Yeah.
Because we're just getting way too many people in this town.
Has there been any discussion amongst the city or whomever to limit the cruise ships?
No more to get the cruise ships, because the more, now that we, you know, the White Pass lease expires in 2023. Oh. And so we did not control our docks since 1968, I think, is when that lease was written. And White Pass controlled all of the tide lands. And at present value in 2014 or 15, whenever this, we really started examining it again, they were paying the city $126,000 a year for the entire tidelands, everything.
Who's they?
White Pass.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So they proposed a new lease, and that would be, I think that would have been, I think it was 240. It would be up to $240,000 by the end of another 20-year lease. And we had a few people in town that were, you know, smart enough to put the numbers together, and they said, "You're talking, we're giving up $4 million a year, more than $4 million a year. What we'd be getting if we controlled our own docks is amazing." So now we have a new company in. And we'll see what happens, but you have to be wary of, you can't, I think too many people in town think, oh, the city can't do it, or we don't have the capability. Well, White Pass paid cruise line agencies to take care of it. There's no reason that the city couldn't hire somebody to take care of it. But the problem is the entrepreneurs, the people that are really capable of putting that kind of thing together, leave in the winter, and they're not allowed to. And even people that are here in the winter leave in the winter and go, that live here and have no other home, go away. So it really limits the experience, the expertise. You don't get businessmen on. We have one now, but almost everybody else up to this point was worked for White Pass.
Yeah.
You know, and so the conflict of interest was very, very prevalent. And even though a lot of the people would say, well, no, that we're being neutral. How can you be neutral when your boss is sitting in the audience? You know?
Yeah, I mean, the question is there a point where 10,000 tourists a day, you know, what's too many? Is there such a thing as too many cruise ship tourists here every day?
Well, I think there will be if we don't build the infrastructure. I mean, it can't hurt. Now, the other thing that could hurt is if we do give away the tidelands again for another 25 years and they build gift shops and touristy things on the tidelands, that would kill the historic district.
Right.
And that could happen. You know, right now the ordinance is they can't.
Yeah.
But you never know.
Well, it seems like the historic district, I mean, the downtown here, businesses could fight against it.
We could, but then if you, and we would, there's no doubt about it. But then if you go up and down the street and you find out how many people actually own buildings, there aren't that many. Like the person over here on 7th Avenue, Tony Heckle, is an absentee landlord. He comes maybe for a few weeks in the summer, but he has somebody in town running his store. That does happen a lot. I mean, we've been here every year, but not everybody is.
Well, how has the businesses changed since, you know, 1976? This was a different place, Dennis, when you started. Mm-hmm. You know, now with so many cruise ships coming in, there's more jewelry businesses.
Oh, gosh, yes.
How does that affect your businesses?
It does in a lot of ways. The one point that you didn't step on is the I want to call them, what is it?
What?
Oh, it'll come up just a second here. What you wanted to talk about, mm-hmm. which has to do with the...
How the types of businesses have changed.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They have, what do you call them? The Smokey the Bears. All the guys.
Oh, the Park Service?
Park Service. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I couldn't bring it up.
That's okay.
The Park Service is come in, and they've taken building after building after building after building and get money, and they fix it up, and they have 10 or 15 Smokey the Bear guys that in 20 minutes we're going to have another tour.
All the free tours.
And everybody will get together, and then they're down the street here or they're down over there. What the hell is this all about? They're in here, and you know, I watch them go by my doors, and other people watch the doors because it's a Smokey the Bear and they're coming around. And it's just bullshit.
They're on a walking tour?
It's on walking tours.
Yeah.
And
well, that's gonna
it
happen.
Starts with one, and then there's two, and then there's three, and then there's 12. And they got their little hats and a group of 12 or 14 people, and they walk them down the street, or they walk them over here, they walk them down the alleys. I mean,
right. And they bypass your businesses.
Exactly.
Right.
It doesn't give them the freedom to go where they want.
It's, I mean, why all of a sudden? I mean, for the last 60 years, the people come and everybody gets a piece of the action. Right now, they've got all their mm-hmm. stuff all over, and everybody's got their little hat. And
the cruise ship passengers go on those walking tours?
Some of them do. Yeah,
because I
mean, a lot of them do.
Cruise ship passengers have limited time. And
they do.
And have their own controlled activities.
I don't feel that takes that much away from us. How the balance in the gift shop tour businesses has been tipped a bit because a lot of people are here for the experience and they don't really care about shopping, you know, which they're hardly, when we opened the museum, there were hardly any tours. As I said, Princess came to us. Now there are so many tours and they just keep opening, and I don't even know how many we have, but I bet we have over 50 different types of tours. Well, people that come
you mean
in
like excursions
walking buses take
they go out to the
oh to car well to car cross
they
take
go,
them
oh.
And once they go to car cross, you never see them again.
Well,
because,
also they go on the train, but
the train the effect, I think the overall effect of the train is it kind of tempers that influx of too many people at one time, because it takes about half of them out and then it brings them back.
Okay.
The problem is they take them down to the docks and unload down there.
Yeah, they should leave them at this end of
and
town.
They never
right.
do. They yeah. built a new station, turnaround station, I guess it is, down at on 15th Street, but it doesn't...
Nobody gets off.
Then they still bus them back to the docks. Then the other thing that the city did, I think, in keeping with Park Service, is they decided to do a stream walk, and it's behind Broadway.
Yeah.
So everybody goes down, if they take that tour,
right.
they go down, and it's, you know, it can be self-guided or whatever, but if they take that, then they come out on 7th Avenue, and they either go down one side or the other, but they won't go back and forth.
Yeah.
So that has actually hurt instead of helped. And, you know, we've proposed many things, like an arch for this end of town that's in keeping with the gold rush, something that kind of confines the historic district, defines it.
Yeah.
And we had 200 and some odd signatures, and it was a different council at that time, but they just tabled it and wouldn't.
It's something to attract people to this
to come to this end of the town.
And, you know, it probably could be done for $250,000, which is a drop in the bucket compared to the $18 million public safety building and the $18 million mm-hmm. swimming pool they want to put in and the rec service. You know, it's like, you have to You have to understand that it takes, you can't just keep investing in things that don't make money. Everything the city has invested in, the public safety building, the library, which of course is good, and not that the public safety building isn't good, but the upkeep and maintenance on that building is more than this city can really afford. And they want to build a retirement home for our senior citizens, right? Apartment place. It would house six people plus one person to monitor it, and they want to spend $7 million on it. You could give people money, and they'd do better than that.
And is the tourist economy enough to support the infrastructure?
For now it is, but if they ever do away with the head tax, if there's ever an issue that and the city doesn't get all that. They get some, but not, I think they get two, and White Pass gets eight.
Oh, okay.
But... you know, if they ever do away with that, and we're not getting that money in, and that's why we want to keep the docks for the city itself, because if they have that revenue, then they've got it, and they can save, and they don't have to spend every penny that comes in.
Right.
And that's, you know, you've got to operate, and no government does, but like a business, if you want to be fluid, if you want to be able to survive. And I think people here think it's never ending, and we know we've been through it.
Right.
We know when it gets bad. And boy, in 2008 and 2009, it got bad.
You really noticed a difference?
Oh my goodness, we did. We really did. And I mean, it's gradually crept back up. Usually it's slower here. You know, it doesn't happen as quickly as it does in the lower 48.
Right.
But once it catches on, it takes the same amount of time to go back.
Yeah, well, I mean, taking a cruise and coming to an Alaskan cruise is an investment for somebody. So I could see that in 2008, 2009,
oh, yeah,
they didn't have those resources.
But the cruises got so cheap that they still came. We had people that would get on the cruise ships, and this one man that you worked with on multiple occasions, seven times.
Wow.
Just he'd never get off. He just kept coming back. Well, I'll be back next week. I want to see if you'll give me a better price on that. And Dennis said, nope, not going to do it. It's not going to go down. And then the last time he came in, he said, okay, I'll buy it. And Dennis said, sorry, it's sold.
Well, I was wondering, I noticed that one time I was here in May 2010. It's just the beginning of a season. And these jewelry shops, not selling Alaska gold or jade or things, but quote-unquote outside jewelry shops connected with the tour companies, is my understanding.
They're coming out of the
Caribbean. But they're not connected. See, that's what everybody says, the tour companies own the jewelry stores, but they don't. They are independent. Now, they might own them because of the advertising, because like Diamonds International at one time, I don't know if it's true, but they were reputed to pay over $20 million in advertising. If that's actually true, if it's $2 million, it's a lot in advertising. Yeah. And advertising does not work very well. It really doesn't, because people... with the hordes of people that are coming, they don't even know what town they're in.
Yeah.
You know, there are very few, I'd say 10% really study where they're going and what they're going to do. And that 10% takes tours.
They just follow the train, people walking.
But the pie has gotten larger, but the pieces of the pie are still about the same.
Right.
And that's, I mean, all these things have contributed to what we're facing now. And, you know, we really don't know. There are a lot of unknowns in Skagway's future.
Right. Well, business in general is probably like that.
Exactly.
But yeah, I was wondering if those jewelry businesses, what effect they've had on
the tourists don't like them, because they don't look at the worst thing they can do. And we do have a couple of tenants, but they all wear suits, a lot of cologne, and smoke.
Yeah.
And they stand out on the boardwalk smoking and throwing their cigarettes in the street. And I guess most people, I don't care if you're an average American or who you are, that is offensive. And if you, but the, I mean, the jewelry stores, they're nice people, really nice people, but it just gives a different flavor to the town. But it's inevitable that that was going to happen eventually, because, you know, anybody that travels knows, like, people are going to St. Kitts. Steve Heitz has his tourist train down there, and he's in business with another partner, but, you know, there, and a lot of our jewelers here are moving to St. Kitts, and they're moving to all of, well, Mexico, but Mexico's not doing as well as it was.
The Caribbean.
But even the Caribbean's not doing
is
so well.
Is there anything that the other businesses here, the community, could do to say we don't want those jewelry stores coming?
Well,
we don't like the feel of them?
No, yeah, I don't think you could stop them. You could stop them from stepping out of their door, mm-hmm. but you, they,
well, you, honey, don't want to control who can
Dennis,
have
Dennis. Dennis took it to the city council. Now, he's run for the council once, and the mayor appointed him one time, but they won't, because of the, you have to be here.
Right.
And even if you're here 8 months, that doesn't, but I did some research on it and found out that people are gone all the time. Yeah. They get excused absences. But anyway, bottom line, when it comes to I think you tried probably in, maybe 2008. No, it was sooner than that. Probably 2003, two or three. He went to the council and he said, I'd like to suggest that we put a cap on the number of jewelry stores that are, he said, I'm hurting myself to do that because I can lease to them,
right.
But it's hurting our business in general to have too many stores, too many jewelry stores. And they said, we can't do that. You know, you
can't control that.
Actually they could, because the lady that runs the Red Onion Saloon has a moratorium on walking tours. Nobody but Park Service and her can have walking tours. And so they can do it. It's not that they can't. It's just that they don't want to. But I think it would be helpful if there were a limited. I think we have 22 now.
Well, I don't know how they help us stay in business.
They obviously can't. I mean, they do turn over.
There
are a couple of really solid places, and there are some very reputable people. But it just gives people the wrong feeling. It's not what they're, you kind of have to.
You're not in Alaska.
No, you have to assimilate into the culture. And if you don't, I mean, it's okay. I don't have a problem with a person not dressing the part. But we had a shop in Vail, Colorado that our kids ran for a while. And boy, they came out of Boston College and Columbia and, you know, and they had their suits in there, you know, and that lasted about 2 minutes, because in Vail, Colorado, you better not look like that.
Right.
And they didn't get it. They were going to be fancy, and all of a sudden it was jeans and flannel shirts and, you know, cowboy boots.
Right.
And you kind of, I mean, that makes people feel comfortable.
Right.
And even in our own stores, we've made a couple of them, basically because we had to take over a jewelry store that we had leased out. We made it a little higher end and more exclusive looking, and it has plants and all kinds of stuff because I like that kind of thing. But it's almost too fancy for Skagway. People like the rusty, rugged look of the, you know, they want to hear Johnny Cash and North Alaska. And,
well, I know that's what Alaskans want, but I didn't know if that's what you feel the cruise ship passengers
think they want that. Definitely.
You had mentioned earlier about recruiting employees. Mm-hmm. You have to spend all year doing that, and how
it's tough.
Housing is a problem. So where do you get your employees, and then what do you do with them in terms of housing?
We pray a lot. Most of what we started in 1998 was the Work Camper program, where you hire people that they travel and work in different parts of the country, and that's how they come to see the country. I think I would say 75% are remarriages. You know, they've maybe a divorce or a death or something, and they want to simplify their lives, and they sell everything and buy an RV and kind of travel to live.
On the road again.
And so we, just by happenstance, bought an RV park, or we developed an RV park, but we bought some property. Again, somebody came to us and said, I've got this property and I really need the money and I want to leave town. And we're saying, what would we do with it? We don't. And so again, as I say, why would we want that? And Dennis goes, opportunity. So
we need a place to house our employees.
All those.
So anyway, we built an RV park. And so these people come to work in Skagway, but it used to work out better than it does now. Now it's so expensive to get here with gas,
yeah,
or if you take the ferry, it's almost cost prohibitive unless you just want to see Alaska. And so that's where we start with the work campers. And we like them because they're at least in their late 40s, 50s.
40s, 50s.
They never come to work drunk. They're always on time. All the things, and they don't have to go back to college.
Right.
They can stay till the end of their contract. So that for us works out very well. We always hire kids, too, a few kids.
Local kids.
Well, there aren't local kids. Don't really. Some of them work, but they all want to work for the railroad, where the wages are a lot higher. And that's. But we do. We hire. Anybody, we love hiring locals, but there aren't enough to go around. That's the biggest problem. But we import some. We've had a family from Joplin, Missouri that came up every year for 6 years in a row. And they came because their grandparents were work campers. And then the next year they brought their kids with them or their grandkids. So it's a lot of that. But housing is terrible.
So your camping area is in
It's
town?
2 miles out of town. Oh. It's mile 2.2 or something like that on the Klondike Highway. And
a beautiful spot on a river.
Where you can catch they love food. It. And it has a clubhouse, and we reserve it for only our employees. And we used to charge, let's see, I think we used to charge $150 for a parking space for the whole, you know, for each month for the summer. And now we charge nothing. And it costs about $600 a month per parking place just to
the
electricity hookups and water.
But what they're used to doing is usually the husband and the wife both work, and then like at Disney World or someplace like that, then they charge them one salary for their parking place.
Oh.
But it's a lot easier to get to Disney World than it is to Skagway, Alaska.
So about how many employees do you have every summer for all your different
businesses? Right now about 30 is our max, and that's just all retail and a couple of maintenance, and you've got to have the maintenance. There's no way around that.
Did you used to do all the maintenance yourself?
Oh, yes.
We've done a lot.
He used to crawl under buildings every year and get the water going and drain the antifreeze out of the pipes and all the things that you have to do.
Yeah, shutting down every winter and starting up again.
Oh,
it's a lot of work.
It is. It's really crazy. But it's, you know, it's part of what you have to do. Sprinkler systems are another big issue in Skagway because they are so expensive. And the city has generously given some assistance with that for a lot of people. But it, I think now it's down to 30% maybe this year, and then 20, and then it'll be 10,
so
and then 9. But you have to have
mandatory.
It's mandatory. And they are so expensive. I'd say our maintenance on sprinkler systems is $20,000 a year.
Well, they
minimum.
Have to be tested and inspected every year or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Every year. And honestly, in our museum, it would be ruined if the sprinkler went off. It'd be done.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Our insurance doesn't treat it that way, but I mean, it would be.
I mean, those are irreplaceable items.
Yeah, unrecoverable.
Well,
so.
We're talking about, you know, the difficulties with the historic district and you know, 2008 went the economic decline.
Yep.
And all this work it takes to do all this. Why do you keep doing it? Why have you kept doing it? What keeps bringing you
that
back?
That is a good question.
Oh, what brings you back?
Why didn't you just throw your hands up and walk away and say, forget it, I'm not doing this anymore?
There have been times, believe me. But it just, I think it gets in your blood, you know. And at the ages we are now, it's, you know, we have to look for an exit strategy of some sort. But we have one employee who's our general manager who's been with us since she was 17. Wow. She's a relative. She's very dedicated. She works 7 days a week all summer long. And for her, as long as she wants to do it, we'll keep it going. Maybe one store, you know. But we, you know, we feel a responsibility to her. And I don't know, it just, part of it is just a matter of pride, you know, being, I don't have the energy to keep up with my pride or my expectations for us and myself, because we are, I mean, I'm 71 and Dennis is 76. And, you know, we're getting to the point where some things are a lot harder than they used to be. And I can't accomplish in one day what I used to accomplish in an hour, really.
But, you know, I was thinking even those obstacles and hurdles with the city council and the historic district, I think some people would say
that's the biggest problem,
that
if we have one.
Yeah, you won't let me do what I want to do, then bye. I'm selling the business and I'm leaving town. But Dennis, you kept going. You didn't leave.
No, we'll leave eventually.
No, but do you know why, when you had those fights, you kept fighting and didn't leave?
Because they weren't that bad.
Oh, I think that took a lot of years off your life.
Something was more important.
Yeah.
What was more important? Just being in Skagway and you like it here, or you like the business of working with tourists?
That's an interesting question. Never really thought about it. You know, it's, you're in
a groove.
In a groove, and off you go, and
it's
not that bad.
Kind of. I think it's his identity.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I was willing to do it in the first place, because I thought, you know, and that's what he said to me, your kids need to know who I am and what I do. I can move to St. Louis and be moderately happy with where I am. But I mean, he's always been so ambitious. If he had moved to St. Louis, he would have found something else.
But being here and being in Alaska and doing the business was who you were. There's a certain part
his
of you
identity, yeah,
that thrives, mm-hmm, that you wanted the kids to see.
Absolutely.
Well, they've seen it. They've seen it.
You're a different person because of it.
But just the personal satisfaction in seeing something done right, mm-hmm, is, I mean, I don't know that, I think a lot of people think that when you have a lot of property, you're in it for the money. And I remember when, and of course you're not going to be in it to go broke,
right,
but I remember people saying when we did this building and then we ended up buying the Golden North Hotel, I don't know how many times I heard, when will the Carringtons say enough is enough? Don't they own enough property in town? You know, anybody could have bought it. Anybody could have worked their tails off. Anybody could have begged the bank to loan them the money. You know, it's just, and that's another thing. I mean, paying off these buildings,
yeah,
isn't an easy thing. So to just quit, let's say we decided in 2008 that this is just too much, we can't take it, it's not making enough money anymore, and we sell everything at a fire sale. I think we would have lost our sense of personal accomplishment. And I think it has, I mean, if anybody that walks through the hotel with me or the museum with Dennis knows we love doing things like this. It's not just, I could no more operate in a store that wasn't clean or well put together or well merchandised or attractive. I mean, I like hearing people come in and say, this is the nicest store we've been in Alaska. It gives you a sense of identity and self-worth and pride and just,
more than just a job.
Absolutely, more than just, if it were just a job, believe me, we had a lot of 5-year plans. I would have been out of here after the first 5-year plan. So, but I mean, it's been an adventure. It's, and when Dennis asked me to marry him, he said, marry me and your life will never be dull. And let me tell you. Yes.
Well, and obviously you continue to enjoy doing it. Or you have enjoyed doing it. It gives you to do it, which is why you kept doing it.
Well, because you come up with new ideas. You think, no, if a fella...
Well, he's mostly these days in his museum.
Yeah.
Likes to talk to people.
That's
and
a great
thing. And that's really fun for him. And he has been so bored the last couple of days that we haven't had the stores open.
Because you're closed up for the season.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we open again tomorrow for one day, and so he'll be up there tomorrow.
At the museum?
The museum.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
So if you have a chance, go in. Yeah. And he can take you, if I'm not around, he can take you upstairs in the hotel. It'd be fun to look at. It's really cool.
Yeah.
All the rooms are dedicated to old Gold Rush families, and their beds from the 1898, just stuff all over the place. Mm-hmm. It's really fun.
Sounds
it's
like
just
a great idea.
I just wish I had more life ahead of me and more energy to do. There's so much to still do.
Well, it sounds like you keep saying Dennis is the one with ideas. I think it's a team effort.
It was kind of catching after a while. And, he's had some issues with memory and everything in the last couple of years. And I realize how much he's taught me over the years. I was a school teacher, and then I was an interior decorator. I mean, for crying out loud, I had no...
Well, he was a school teacher,
too. Well, he was, too. But he was a businessman at heart, and I guess I was, too, but didn't know it.
Well, and your interior decorating background clearly shows maintaining the historic look.
Well,
you've succeeded at that.
That works, but at the same time, I mean, my dad was a businessman, and, I think that you just pick it up. I used to do his books and while I was in college and high school, and, you just do it. But the Midwest has the strongest work ethic, and that's where our manager comes from. She's my cousin's daughter, as a matter of fact, and she started at 17, went to high school. I went to college, paid for college by working up here. And
your family's had that ethic.
Yes.
You were raised with that.
Don't know how to do anything else. I mean, I could no more. I don't know what I'd do if we retired. I think we'd both, Dennis has written some, and I probably would write a book.
Yes.
We were both English teachers. And
Dennis will be bored.
Oh,
retirement, right?
Oh my gosh! I don't know.
I don't think I'd want to do that.
He's already bored, just not going to work every day. You know, it's not fun for him to do.
So Dennis, it sounds like you're a doer. You want to always be doing something.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the time.
He's not
long as I can do it with her.
He doesn't. He doesn't like to look like the kids. He wants to be a dog musher. He wants to. If you're going to do softball or baseball, play the game. Don't watch it on television. That's always been his deal.
Yeah, and I was thinking about the why I said why you keep doing it, and you said the pride, and that's what I was thinking too. It's the following through with something. You, Dennis, have had these ideas and you started these businesses, so you've wanted to see them through. You don't want to quit part way.
Right.
I never would quit doing anything. I don't care. I'm one of those people, and he is too, that will stay up all night to get, if the store's not going to be ready or what. I remember when we were much younger, we were up 3 days trying to get Carrington's ready.
Get it all set.
After we built the museum. And we had this kid that worked for us, and we called him Chicken Man because he was everywhere. I mean, this guy just ran around like crazy, and we absolutely wore him out. And we did not sleep for 3 days till everything was done, and he just passed out, and we didn't see him for a week.
But yeah, I can see there's something about putting your all, both financially and your energy and your identity, into a business. You don't want to just walk away when it gets hard.
No.
No. You can always fix it.
Yeah.
You have to fix it. Everything's a challenge, you know, and it all opens the door. I mean, to lose my husband and have 3 little kids and be pregnant with my last, it was a terrible blow. But at the same time, it opened other doors that I would have never experienced if it hadn't been for that. And I mean, I was devastated.
Yeah, of course.
But you don't stop.
You didn't realize how you could succeed independently.
Exactly.
So you have to.
Well, I did. I mean, I wasn't about to do anything else. You know, I wasn't going to move in with my parents or, you know, it's not. And that's what they taught me. You know, you take care of yourself. You learn how to do that. And all of our kids are pretty good. Our daughter Sherry has a tour company, and she's running that. Our son Scott now is helping with the commercial real estate, since Dennis isn't as active in that as he once was. And so we do have 8 kids, and that's a bunch to...
8 kids?
Yes, 8 kids.
That's a lot.
So, and 17 grandchildren, 3 great-grandchildren, and 1 on the way. So,
well, it's been wonderful talking to you guys.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. There's so much to say.
Yeah, you know? I'm going to say, is there more other things that I haven't kind of brought up about being here in Skagway, either the community or being a business person or getting along or not getting along with the Park Service?
I wouldn't say we don't get along with the Park Service. I would just say that we probably have, we're less government, more, we like to see people have an opportunity. And I mean, we've tried, in fact, we tried over here on 7th Avenue. That was another thing that got shot down by the HDC, and that was Dennis wanted to build incubator businesses. So he wanted to build a facade and in the middle have a courtyard and have stalls rented out to individual artists so they could afford to. It wasn't totally altruistic. It was thinking, okay, if these people can make it here and get a good start, then they can rent some of the properties we're building later on. So it's not like, you know, oh, we just did this because out of the goodness of our hearts, but part of it was wanting people to succeed, wanting people in Skagway to be able to stay here and see that there was something other than going to work for the Park Service or the train, you know, that there could be something else, there could be other opportunities. And I mean, there's nothing that makes me more excited than see somebody open a business and just really rock. You know, I think that's the neatest thing that can happen, to see somebody really succeed because they're working hard.
It's a different kind of a smile.
It is. I mean, you feel proud for them, you know, like, that's neat.
So that incubator did not get
passed. It didn't fly because of the HDC. They said that it would, let's see, the facade, I have a picture, it was beautiful. It was all, well, almost like it is now on the outside with the, you know, the different buildings, but they were all facades, and then the back of it was tent frames, and that we would have put canvas over, and then the center, and then that didn't go, so we did another plan, but the cost of the one that would have been all enclosed was some, I think the bid came back at $2.8 million, and you could never make that back. Not in that kind of thing, you know, because you'd be charging these people.
So they
maybe
didn't like, the historic district didn't like the idea.
They didn't like the idea of tents.
Gold Rush.
I know.
Of course.
I know. But it was...
But it depends on who's on the
They wouldn't do that to you now.
So it wasn't a question of the incubation type of business. It was the building that was the problem for them? Or it was both?
I think it was the building. I think it but anything. I mean, anything we did was met with awnings. What we went through for awnings. It was just crazy. And even when we wanted to put, we had problems down on Third Avenue because Smart Bus drops off and people were standing in our doorway because it was recessed and people that were trying to shop couldn't get in because the bus stop was there. So we said we wanted to put awnings on the building and that way people had something to stand under. And it took us 2.5 years to get that passed.
Just because of how they were going to look?
They don't want you to cover an architectural feature. The corbels were massive, so we didn't want to cover them either. We thought it would be better if they stuck out. Well, they wanted that. It was one thing. It contradicted itself, actually, because the code says you can't cover an architectural feature. The head of the HDC said they had to be covered because she didn't like the way it looked.
Very frustrating.
Oh, it was very frustrating. Mm-hmm. But when we finally got we had the awnings approved on this building over here, and it took forever to do that too. Not quite as long as it took for the ones up the street. But by the time they made their decision on the ones up the street, I couldn't get the fabric. I said, I'll just use the same approved fabric that they have down here. Well, by the time the 2.5 years had passed, couldn't get that fabric anymore. And so, but when they were looking at the fabric, I said, all you have to do is walk down to the corner. I had a picture of it, but they wanted an actual sample of the fabric. And I had a big picture and I said, it's on the corner. Well, we're sitting here in City Hall. We're not walking down the street. I mean, they have to pass it to, I was just silly, And, you know, it's just, I mean, I can't tell you, as I said before, how nice it has been. And even the Park Service, I mean, they'll help you in any way they can. You know, they really will. And I don't think they mean to encroach upon private business. It just developed, developed.
In previous periods, there was more difficulty with the Park Service than there is now?
Probably so. I think there was an issue when some of them started carrying guns. I think a lot of people complained about that. I didn't have a feeling one way or the other about it. But I don't honestly think there's
particular individuals or superintendents that made a difference?
The superintendents do make a difference. Sandra Bedores, or what was her last name? She was easy to work with, really easy to work with. The original Doug, why can't I remember his name?
Yeah.
Sims.
Doug Sims, right.
He was fantastic to work with there, but my goodness, it was so small at that time. They did an archaeological dig on the lot next to us after we had it gardened with one of the park superintendents. And so the whole tourist season, it was roped off with orange,
right,
that stuff. So anyway,
schmuck.
They found a chicken bone and a dime, I think, is what it amounted to. That whole huge dig, our tax dollars at work.
Some of it, I know with the building restorations and moving, some of it they have to do for compliance work. An empty lot.
But they weren't building.
What do you mean compliance? It's they make up the rules.
Yeah.
And so,
if you're going to build a road through an area,
mm-hmm,
okay,
like when they built the pipeline. When they built the pipeline, they had to have archaeologists go through first to make sure there was no disturbance of, traditional native sites. And if there was anything, the archaeologists removed it so the construction wouldn't damage it.
Mm-hmm.
That's compliance work.
Yeah. Mm.
So the Park Service, in some cases, is under government rules. They have to do those kinds of things.
But
when they are reconstructing or moving.
But they didn't do one thing. I mean, it didn't make sense for that. It was almost like it was a retaliatory thing at that time. And not because Park Service was trying to get even with us, but the wife of the superintendent at that time worked for us. And the superintendent, I think, had a little burr for some reason. And it wasn't, I mean, we treated his wife very well, but he just had kind of a, I think a lot of people that come to town think, oh, Corrington's, they own the whole town, you know, that kind of attitude. And I think that for some people, that's a problem. You know, some people take offense to someone's success, or they assume, they don't know you and assume that you're not a nice person, and that they don't think, well, perhaps they're shy. You know, mm-hmm. when I first came to town, everybody knew who I was because they knew Dennis. And so they would say, they'd say hi, but they'd never say, hi, I'm this person or whatever. So I didn't know people by first name. And a lot of times I would say hi and smile, but I'd never use their name because I didn't know who they were. And then I'd ask Dennis who they were, and he'd say, I don't know. So that didn't
give them
help.
All name bags.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Name tags.
Yeah, name tags for sure. But anyway.
So the question is, how much is going to happen with the group that we're talking about?
The Park Service?
The Park Service, yeah. Are they going to stop right now? Are they going to keep growing and getting bigger and have more and more buildings that they can leak out?
Lease out? Well, we'll have to ask the Park Service.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't work for the Park Service, so I can't answer that question.
But you can ask questions.
Yes, you can. I mean, just like when they came in 1976 and they said, we're going to do
two buildings,
and now they've got 20. So who knows what their plans are, if they have plans for more or not. I don't know.
The city does a few things, like they have the Rapuzzi House and a few things like that, which I think the city has no business being in that business. They need to sell that and take the money and use it for some.
Is the Rapuzzi House, it's
George's old house.
Because I know the park got his collection of, or some of his collection of things.
Right. Everything in
most
the basement
of his things.
And
well, actually, Dennis did the appraisal because he's a certified appraiser.
I know that's a whole other story.
That is another story. But
I didn't realize that his house was a historic house.
I don't think it is.
Oh, they just own it.
It went to the city.
It did go to the city because they have a Rapuzzi committee, and you know they're working on restoring that. And same thing for the old city hall. And you know the city can't afford to keep doing things that don't pay
generate
back,
money.
That don't generate money. And for some reason, I mean, why is it the city's responsibility to do a nursing or retirement home? That's taking away from private people. I mean, I don't want to do a retirement home, but maybe somebody does, you know. And
I would think that the Rapuzzi House, the Park Service would be interested in because it fits with them having some of his collection.
But it might not. Because of the, it could be just simply because it's not an historic house. I'm not sure it is.
Maybe how that family donated. I mean, you don't know how.
It could be.
Yeah, it could be.
Or how Phyllis Brown, she inherited everything. We had, when Dennis did the appraisal, in fact, I remember exactly when it was the summer of 1989, and he did not want to do it because we were too busy, and Phyllis kept calling him and calling, and I was pregnant with our last child, and I'd go over there every Friday. We would start with this dig, and I'd take all the voluminous notes of, oh my goodness, it took forever to do it.
I've only heard that it was a lot of material.
A lot of junk.
Collected.
Nash.
Mm-hmm.
And Some junk and some
valuable. Good stuff. Some good stuff. I think a lot of the good stuff is in the Golden North Hotel, though. I don't know how we lucked out with that. I mean,
how
there
did
were,
you acquire it? Phyllis gave it to you?
No, not theirs. It just, people donated. At one point, they donated furniture not to us, but to a previous owner. And I think it was probably Edie Lee that got the most in the Norse, because they lived in town, and I think they just, you know, and at one point people didn't like old things. Yeah. They wanted new and modern stuff, and so they gave away their brass beds and their highboard beds. And so it's kind of interesting, all the pieces of furniture. I kind of take for granted because they've been there forever, but we refinished almost everything. I mean, some of it was in pretty bad shape. Yeah. And so we did a lot of refinishing, and but it's pretty neat. We have the bed that what's his name, the president that died here,
Harding.
That he slept in at the Pullen House, and so there's a bunch of stuff like that.
And who owned the Golden North before us?
The Whiteheads. That was the Whiteheads, and then prior to them, Edie Lee and the Knorr family.
And they all operated it as a hotel.
As a hotel, yes. And I guess they had a restaurant too. The restaurant was very small at that time, but it was good. But they just, the Whiteheads from the period of, I think, 71 or 77 when they bought it, didn't do any maintenance whatsoever. I mean, it was just unbelievable. We took it down to the studs on the inside, and in fact there were no studs in some places, and shiplap and paper, you know, no drywall. I forgot 2,000 pounds of drywall we used, and the parlor upstairs, and Dennis said, I don't know if the building hauled it.
I'm not sure what's holding it up.
But he went, once we had all the floors out and all the whole thing gutted, he went outside and he said, Nancy, come out here. And he had his finger on the building and it moved.
Spooky.
Oh, that's a little scary.
It was a little scary. So.
Well, with the historic buildings that you do own, that one, if in the future you want to sell it, would you consider selling it to the Park Service, or would you prefer to sell it privately?
You know, probably we would. Now, one of the things that we did do at one time with one of the superintendents, and it's been probably 10 or more years, is we invited him to turn it into a tour that they could do it themselves. You know, we wanted some kind of tax benefit for just for losing the business, the revenue. But, you know, we weren't asking for a lot. And at one time we tried to donate our museum to the city. And it was at one time that we were really one of those, why are we doing this? Let's just quit. And so Dennis talked to the city manager at that time. And he said, Dennis said, the only thing we want is two things. And we had it appraised, and it was appraised at $850,000, and that was 25 years ago. And Dennis said, the one thing I would like is that if you ever deaccession the museum, that our kids have the right of first refusal to buy any piece back at fair market value, not today's value, but whatever the future value is, and they wouldn't do it. So they didn't get the museum.
So if the Park Service came to you with a fair offer at market price for your building, and someday in the future they'd have just as much chance as a private person?
Absolutely. We let our son handle the real estate now, and he's got the numbers down, what it would take and what. But, you know, one of the things, again, to prove my point that we weren't doing this just for the money, is that building makes so much more money now that it's retail than it ever did as a hotel, bar, restaurant. And
I was just thinking that there's probably some people in Skagway who would never consider selling to the Park Service because they have issues with them. I don't know if that's still the case.
I don't know. I
don't think I've had any discussion with anybody.
I've never heard much negative about the Park Service.
The only thing, I mean, anything that we've said negative has to do, well, first of all, the one time we tried to rent, right. they wouldn't believe us. And that's right. that's the same superintendent who dug up the property. but anyway, the I think they've done a nice job. I do think it's a little much at this point. I'd like to see something, but the Park Service providing jobs in Skagway. I'd like, and it's not the Park Service's fault necessarily, I guess. I don't even know why they have so many people, so many interpreters.
Because they're given tours in groups of 10.
I know, but they're doing, well, it's like making work.
Make work.
You know, yeah, and that's okay, but it brings on a lot of government that, you know, it's...
And what's the percentage of local people who work for the Park Service?
Oh, my, I think a lot. I think, I couldn't tell you exactly
how many.
I don't
think a lot. I think that they bring in their own people.
Well, they do bring in some, but gosh, it's given locals jobs, which I think is a good thing to get the locals jobs.
Well, true for that.
Yeah.
But it brings in a lot of people that have... it seems like a lot of the people that are strong environmentalists that lean too far over the other way, in my opinion, mm-hmm. Come with the outsiders that come in from the Park Service. But, you know, that's my opinion. I mean, I'm kind of middle of the road on a lot of things.
Well, I'm saying, you know, that you hire people to work in your stores who come and then leave. And the Park Service has some people who come in the summer and leave. Are those the same issues or different? How is that different? That tour businesses have people who aren't local employees, as does the Park Service.
Well, our tax dollars are paying for those those workers.
Oh, I see.
You know, okay. That's the difference because okay. It's not a not us, not in. It doesn't matter who it is.
Right.
You know, they're competing for. Well, they're also competing for employees, and I don't know what their wage, what their rate is, but I'm sure they pay better than.
In your mind, the difference is that those are tax dollars paying those people.
Exactly.
Private dollars.
Making right. work that isn't absolutely necessary. I mean, I you know, when you talk about trimming the fat, that's mm-hmm. where I think if you're going to trim, you have to figure out where to trim, and you don't have to cut things out completely, but sometimes you just have to. I mean, we have to. We've cut, since our business has gone down because of the competition, we've cut advertising. We used to spend a fortune on advertising. And we, you know, it just makes you examine things more closely.
Where would you do that advertising?
Well, there were magazines and we'd do it on the ships. And, you know, it was quite expensive. There were times, I'd say, when we were spending up to $200,000 a year on advertising, which is a lot for a business our size.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work anymore. And I think it doesn't work as well now. You don't get the right kind of people when you're advertising a free train whistle or a free charm or whatever. You get people that come in for the free train whistle and charm. They
walk
don't come
in
to
walk
shop
out.
And they clog the registers asking for their free piece while everybody the people that are actually trying to buy something can't get to the registers. So it doesn't work, and so often people don't even know. There are hordes of people that come through and they don't know where they are.
Right.
The people that come in the museum are so much more fun because they care about the history. They want to know something about what's going on, and they really take the time. Well, some of them don't. Some of them go through it in 5 minutes, and some of them come and stay for 3 hours and talk to Dennis as long as
they can do it. Yeah.
So, but I mean, in general, I don't think the Park Service has harmed Skagway. I think you'd have to say it's on the plus side of what's been done, I think. Don't you really?
Dennis is on the fence on that.
He's got his real estate hat on. That's, but.
So that's the competition of them buying up buildings?
Yeah.
That bothers you, yeah.
Not that he wants to buy, but it's the leasing of the buildings that is the competition.
It's competition and limits private.
Well, if they take it out of the out of the market, mm-hmm. it's not there.
Right.
But.
And if it stayed in the
If that went across the street, I could, you know, and we could buy it and make money out of it. That makes sense. But the Park Service could do say, oh, it's old, and so we're going to take it and da-da-da-da-da-da, and it belongs to them.
And then they take it out of circulation so mm-hmm. that, like, you bought your buildings from somebody else, and then you'll sell to somebody else, and the Park Service does it, that's it. It's out of the
It's gone, pool. Yeah.
Well, and yeah. even the hotel, yeah. I feel like, I mean, if you have a chance to go through the hotel and museum, you'll see that it's pleasing to the eye. Uh-huh. And I did everything I could to make sure that the wallpaper was close to the colors and the patterns used at that time. And I used Bradbury and Bradbury on the first floor, which is a real expensive reproduction of wallpaper. But then when we turned it into retail, the people that rented the store covered it all with wood paneling. And it's like, what happened to my wallpaper? But the upstairs has a little less, but very Victorian and very, but the Park Service wouldn't be satisfied with that because it wouldn't be 100% authentic. You know, it would be a reproduction of this or that or the other. And so I think that maybe they wouldn't appreciate it as much as, and we couldn't do what it would take. I mean, that's one reason when we bought the hotel, we paid over $1 million for it, and we put more than $1 million into it, and we could not get financing for it because the banks were not looking favorably upon small hotels, and we had to carry that paper and pay for it out of our retail businesses for a full year and a half, which was painful.
Well, that's why I said and, it shows commitment that, you know.
Oh, it was
lesser unbelievable. People would have walked away.
And we knew that to do the hotel the way that it would make it into a modern hotel, not necessarily looking modern, but have all the updated plumbing and everything, would have been another $1 million. There's no way we could have ever gotten it out of. You can't make decisions like that when you're not the Park Service.
Or a millionaire,
so, yeah. Yeah. And it's just, you know, and everybody always thinks, oh, you just make tons and tons of money. But we even tell our employees, okay, you buy something for $100, you sell it for $200, your freight is a couple dollars, your credit card charge is 2.5%. You know, when you add everything, if you make $1,000 a day in a store and you've got two employees, you've lost money. You know, you just not, there's a break-even point.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're able to pay off our loans on the buildings, but there's not a lot of excess there.
Yeah.
There's not,
You invest in inventory and you invest in employees and you've invested in the buildings.
And we pay well. I mean, I just heard today that, well, Amazon, did I tell you, went up to $15 an hour, and that's what we pay.
Yeah.
So it's
pretty good.
It makes for a big payroll. Yeah. Because not all of them are at 15, some are at 30, you yeah. know, and yeah. it, you know, it's quite a
it's
bit. In
a
fact, we always laugh when we look at our salaries because our salaries are less.
I keep wanting to get a job. She won't get it to me.
Well, as I say, you know, you work such long hours that, yeah, it probably comes out to pennies on the dollar.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But it's a labor of love. I mean, if you love doing what you're doing, and there are lots of parts of it I know, but, you know, if you like it, and I'm excited about doing the hotel, and then I kind of run out of gas, and I think, boy, I'm not like, I don't have the energy I used to have, yeah. you know, and you don't have the help here. You know, it's hard to get anybody to do anything right. during the regular tourist season because everybody's so busy with everything else. And then you've got this little window of October where it's really nice.
Right.
And if you don't get it done during that time, it's pretty hard to do it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of challenges, but, you know, you've made it fun.
Something to do.
As I say, you seem to have enjoyed it, so that... worth something. It seems like you've enjoyed what you've done.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I get to do it with her. That's the important part.
That's a good thing. Sweet. Yeah.
Is that the right answer?
That's the right answer.
It's been a quite a journey. It's just, it's not over yet.
No, it keeps going.
Yeah.
It keeps going. Yeah. Well, so, I know you're getting ready to leave town, so thank you so much for much time this afternoon.
Absolutely. It was really a pleasure. We're delighted to be able to do it. It's kind of fun to be able to talk about all these, to refresh your memory and kind of go back into what all we've done and what all other people in town have done. As I said, like Steve Heitz has really added a lot to the history of the town.
And
he's really good. He's a walking encyclopedia of Skagway history. Yes, he really is.
Well, and as you said, you know, you don't get awards for doing what you've done. So this is a little bit of documenting your legacy of what you've contributed to Skagway.
There you go.
So that's a good thing.
Way to think of it.
Yeah.
That's, I always said everybody would say that's Dennis Carrington's wife. They never say this.
Now they're going to say that's Nancy Carrington's husband.
That probably would be.
Not really. Not really. I'm always the background. I like being in the background. Dennis always was quite a showman, and I've always been kind of, but I've gotten more aggressive in with all this political stuff that's come up with the railroad and everything. You have to kind of look at what's good for the town.
Yeah.
And not just good for you, you know. It just, I don't want the town to short sell itself. You know, it's capable of lots of things in cooperation with Park Service and with the railroad. Right. And, you know, it can be done. It's just that you have to have pretty smart people on the city side running it in order to make it work.
And people in all the organizations being willing to cooperate and work together. And you say not the power trips.
Exactly.
Everybody being in it for the same goal, maybe.
There's a little bit of you know, you leave in the winter, you know, that kind of feeling about things. And it's funny because the two people that were the hardest to deal with in town are gone. They left, you know, they moved. So I don't know, but anyway, it's an interesting little town, and I hope that it can hold its historic value, because, and I think that's a lot why a lot of people were opposed to the road, you know. They were so afraid that it would open it up, but honestly I think it could only make it better, really, in the long run. And it would keep people here longer, because being able to have options. I mean, we've been stuck in Juneau for 4 days at a time. And when you're here and you're sick, and Dennis had to be flown out. He had a stroke in 2007. And there weren't any options, you know. And if they wouldn't have been able to fly, he'd probably be dead. So that's always a tough thing for people that get older. So even if you have a retirement home, it doesn't help that much, because you can't get to a doctor.
Driving to Whitehorse is not an option for those kinds of things?
You could. It's, what is it, 2.5 hours about?
2.5 hours, and then you have to find a doctor.
Yeah.
They have a hospital there, don't they?
I don't know if they do or not. They do in
Juneau.
But most stuff that happens in Juneau gets sent to Anchorage or Seattle.
But I was thinking it might be closer to drive 2.5 hours to Whitehorse than to try and get to Juneau.
If there's no ferry or the planes aren't flying, but if there was a road, it's only 90 miles.
I see, a road to Juneau.
Yeah. And that would be
excellent.
Excellent for the. I think it would just open this community to, first of all, it would open it to competition that people don't want, just like don't wash your windows, you know. And I think that it challenges some people like challenges and other people don't, you know. Right. And I think if it's a less ambitious person is challenged, they take it as a personal affront, whereas someone that has vision sees it as an opportunity, you know, and I think that so much could happen here. It would challenge people to clean up their junk and, you know, get a lot of stuff. It looks great right now, but boy, when you come here in April and you look at all the garbage and the trash and the stuff that's sitting around and
melted out. So if there was a road to Juneau, do you think it would bring in more tourists, or do you think it would be more just a local access?
I think it would probably be like car crosses, that people will drive a car across, so maybe people that only go to Juneau, there are ships that don't come here.
Okay.
You know, they may come here. It would increase bed and breakfast traffic. There's a really lovely place out in Dyea called the Chilkoot Outpost, and the people that own it, Kathy is a good friend of mine, but it they don't get the traffic.
So it would increase independent travel.
I think people that would come and stay in town and really get to take advantage of the fact that it's a national park, you know. I can't see any downside. It used to be, oh, you're going to ruin our hiking trails. How can there not be a hiking trail? I mean, look at this country. Yeah. You know, there are enough hiking trails to go around for a town of 800.
It would be nice.
It just would be. And progress isn't always the best thing, but I think when it raises the bar, and I think that's what the Park Service has done. They've raised the bar for the town. I think that's real important. So, you know, not everybody feels that way, and everybody kind of wants to keep it all to themselves and let it be a little the best kept secret, but you can't.
Yeah, well, there's always the I was here and I did my thing, I don't want anybody else to come.
Mm-hmm.
That it happens in every town.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, there's no doubt.
Some of that, I'm sure.
But anyway, it's been quite a run, huh, honey?
Something to do. Ain't over yet.
Ain't over yet. All right. Well, you've talked a lot, so.
Yeah, we've talked way more than we should.
No, it's great. I'm going to turn it off, though.